I'm Angie, and I am an alcoholic. And I have been called worse. This really is a very special day for me. As some of you know, that my daughter Norma spoke this morning. And it is her 10th anniversary at being sober and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. The incredible blessings. Johnny Harris was right when he told me a long, long time ago that the answers to all my problems were between the covers of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that all I had to do is throw myself into this program without any reservation. I didn't believe him, but he was so gorgeous that I tried it. As Norma was speaking, and it was such a blessing to hear her, I remember her when she was 3 weeks old, and she wouldn't stop crying, and I was so into taking the poison that I was taking, and she wouldn't stop crying, and I was bathing her in a basin, and I just got her, and I held her down in the water, and I wanted her to die, you see. Because I couldn't stand the motherhood, the responsibility. And you see, the only thing that saved her life was that I thought I would go to prison again. You see? And to have her now stand before you and before me on this day and to see what an example of Alcoholics Anonymous she is. I am so grateful that God does for me what I cannot do for myself. Huh? That's how I feel today. There are mothers and fathers out there that need to know what has happened to Norma and I in this time. There, you need to know that God does bring blessings and does heal the pains that are between us and our children. And it doesn't come overnight. But if it came overnight, it wouldn't be as valuable as it is for today. I am from Blythe, and you all know where Blythe is. It's over where God sends you when he's punishing you for asking for stuff. What I'm doing in Blythe is that there's a man in Blythe. That's what I'm doing in Blythe. We're both dedicated to making me happy. I have. I have him convinced he never had it so good, and the woman's place is in the mall. If he croaks tomorrow, I'm out of there tomorrow night. Like Norma, I am a Mexican. I was born and raised in Orange County in a little barrio. You know what a little barrio is? It's a little Mexican community. In the days that I was raised there, we didn't let any Anglos in, and they weren't too anxious to come in there either. I was born a long, long time ago in a planet far, far away. Into a family that never was ready for me. I was born in a hospital, and when they came home with this baby, they still didn't have a name for me, and the reason for that is because my daddy wanted to name me after his girlfriend, and my mother's narrow-minded. I mean, I did not ever belong to that family. I had an alien takeover a long time ago. I had an older sister that was perfect. They always told her what to do, and she always did it right, and she always screwed it up for me, because I never knew how to be good until after I was bad. And so they're always whipping on me. And I didn't know I was a better child. If I'd have thought I was a better child, then I held it against them guys. I held everything else and blamed them for everything else. I just thought that I got whipped because I didn't know how to be good. Now, they were divorced when I was just a little kid, about 7, and my mother would send me to the nuns so they could teach me to be a lady. And she said, "You're just like your father." And I knew what her opinion was of him. She didn't like him too well. Not only did I not know how to be good, but as soon as they said, "Thou shalt not," I may not have thought of doing it before, but as soon as they said, "Thou shalt not," I had an overwhelming desire to do it. And I could not get it out of my mind until I did it. And so somebody dared me, and I raised the nun's skirt, see what she had all the under all them clothes, and they 86 me from catechism. And when I got to school the next day, all the kids thought I was terrific. Because it seems that I was born with an emptiness in my soul. There was a yearning, a longing, a hunger to be loved, to be wanted, and to be accepted. As a little child, I used to worship my mother. I ached for my mother to love me so desperately. It seems that most of my life, I was so hungry for love, I would just give my heart to anybody that would take it. I was so hungry. And no matter what I did, I was never enough. It seemed that I was an old lady long into Alcoholics Anonymous, still trying to seek that love and approval that was never enough for me. That was never enough for me. So when I got all that attention when I got to school, it filled up some of them empty places. I believe that I always had the pilot lit. All I ever needed was the fuel. Now I'm just a little child. I didn't have a drink, but I used to have to resolve my life in any way that I could as a little child. I used to read the fairy tale books and pretend about the princess and the prince and live happily ever after. All I really wanted was to be happily ever after. That's all I wanted. And I mean, I still want to be happily ever after. I'm still in the process of happily ever after. It just all keeps changing around somehow. Now, when I was about, my mother got married to a man that was starting to get funny, and I went to her and I said, "Well, look here," and she said, "Well, you lie. You can't ever stand for anybody to be happy, and you lie." And I knew I wasn't lying, but I had lied about everything else, so I know today that I could not be believed. So I used to think, if I could only get to my daddy, I knew that it would be better with my daddy. Now, my daddy was over in the San Fernando Valley, where he'd taken up light housekeeping with a lady with 8 kids, and all he wants is one more. But he used to take people up north to pick grapes and prunes, and we were fruit pickers. God made 2 kinds of Mexicans, as fruit pickers and non-fruit pickers. And I'm not a fruit picker. They try to make a fruit picker out of me. Oh. Gotten really close and next to a lot of things I really like, but I've never really been in any danger of getting addicted to work. I know I've never liked working. I always like to do what I like to do when I want to do it, and I want to stop when I want to stop. I don't like nobody tell me what to do. I had a slight problem with authority. I still have a slight problem with authority. Some things don't change. Anyway, we stayed beyond the season with the Gallo brothers. And they gave my dad a case of sherry wine, and somebody must have said, "Thou shalt not." I remember I had a big water glass. It looked like a big old glass of that sherry wine, and it went down. It went boom. I felt like I put my finger in the light socket. Everything felt wonderful, and I loved it. I just knew that if anything felt that good, the next one would be better. better. So I'm a pig from the get-go. I'm no sipper. I'm a chug-a-lugger. It's just too bad something that good has to be wasted on social drinkers that don't appreciate it. I appreciate it. I loved how that felt. I loved how I felt. Everything felt good. But then it's the next day because I always overshot the goal and somehow I come to, and I'm from the Pachuco days, long, long time ago, when you used to be wear them big hairdos long before Norma's time. And I came to the next day and all that hair is all over my face. I don't know if your first drunk was a wine drunk, but you know when you had happens and you come to from them wine drunk. You're so dry, you feel like you've been mopping the floor with your tongue. You know, you drink water and get drunk all over again. My clothes is torn and I'm all in disarray, and I knew something terrible happened. I don't know what it was because I couldn't remember, but it seemed it started a lifetime of looking at people's faces, trying to remember what I had done and trying to see what I had done, terrified to know and terrified not to know. And that's the way it was with me. I had a sense of shame of being dirty that went all the way through me, and it never was any different at any other time. You see, it just got worse, but I always remembered that this time it's going to be different. I never planned to get that bad again. Now, I'm just a child. I went back to my mother's, and I wasn't wanted there. She told me they'd been free of me over a year, and I was 13 years old, and I never felt 13 years old. I always felt like this was it. I could not get out of this one this time. And I started living here and there with anybody that took me in for a little while, and people would feel sorry for me and take me in for a little while. But I had a personality disorder, and I also my drunk. And we Mexicans like to have them parties from the whole weekend. We like to get parties where you get drunk several times a weekend. If we haven't had knifings and shootings and the cops and the paramedics, we ain't had no fun. We like to join the gangs and beat each other up and call it fun. You know, you read about us in the papers, think, them poor people, how ignorant. They don't know we're having fun. That's what's fun. And I always drank more and got into more trouble. I was the only one having fun. Nobody around me ever had any fun when I drank. And I always wanted to fight the girls and go with their boyfriends. And, you know, it's just fun. And then the girls wanted to tell me what I did. Yeah, I was one of the original topless, bottomless dancers in them parties. I don't even get paid for it. I don't even remember it. You know, the girls always want to tell you the next day. Them girls, they get that look, you know, of contempt, that how bad you are, how dirty you are, and how clean we are. So then I'd beat them up, and then they didn't tell me, because violence is how I handled anything that was embarrassing, humiliating, or I was ashamed of or afraid of. I also don't know how to work because I'm just a child, so I'd take up burglary. It seemed to be a good idea at the time. Your things were always much more interesting than mine. I really wasn't a bad person. It's just that you had more than me. I'm just taking yours. If I know there's some people here on my age. If you lived over in Lemon Heights in Orange County in the late 40s or 1951, I'd like to make my amends tonight. When Mary talked about getting sober in 1951, I remember that was the year I was discovered by the state of California. And they took me before a judge, and there sat my mother and all them other purple-lipped people looking at me with that "I told you so" look in their face. You know how they look at you? "We told you so." And here I am sitting there, and the judge looks at me and says, "Well, young lady, what do you think we ought to do with you?" Well, I'm slick, hip, and cool. I slip down on my seat and pull my collar up and say, "You're the judge, man. You ought to know." That's the wrong person to have that kind of an attitude with. He sent me and my attitude to do a little bit of time for the state of California. They didn't understand my case was different. When they finally let me out, I'm supposed to do 9 months because I'm just a child, just turned 18, but I do 13 months because I don't know how to be good there. I'm a walking bust. I always got caught at everything I ever did. I thought I'd be the only gray-haired little old lady in the girls' reformatory. When they finally let me out, I took my first inventory. I don't have a job. I don't have a home. I don't have any money. I don't have an education. And I'm thinking, what an order. I can't go through with it. I better go out and find me a husband, because God knows I need somebody to take care of me. The bad news is a certain kind of man always caught my attention. Usually they got tattoos, and they wear them tight t-shirts, and they got muscles, and they walk with a little slouch. Their tattoos usually say "Born to Lose" and "Mother." They walk with a little slouch, got greasy hair and shiny eyes and all teeth, and they walk with a little hop, don't they? Say, "What? What's happening, baby? Oh, God, it still goes through me." I used to think that was charisma. Today I know it to be psychosis. My sponsor used to tell me, "You can't make chicken salad out of chicken shit." Well, I tell you, I try. The guy I found built them castles in the air, and I lived in them. And three months later, we were pregnant, and I was married. And he was a mainline heroin user. And he had an idea what a good Mexican wife should be, and I had an idea what a good Mexican husband should be, and never the twain shall meet. Been apologizing to my kids ever since for the genes we put together. But, you know, all things work together for good for those who take the third step. So there's my daughter's over today. Anyway, we were quite equipped for parenthood. He decides, he starts hearing about me and them stories about me. He don't want nobody talking that way about his wife, so he wants me to stay home and while he's partying. Well, I don't stay home silently. I like to tell him about his heritage, his mother, his father, lack of, and he don't want me talking that way about his mother. So he used to say, "If you don't shut up, I'm going to knock you out." Well, that certainly sounds like "thou shalt not" to me. So I used to jump him all the time. I always got my first one in there. We had quite a marriage. And he introduces me to little white pills with crosses on them. I don't know what they are, but I sure knew what they did to me. I had one eyeball over there and one over there, and I'd make baby clothes all night long. Put it together and tearing apart. I never remember which one I was doing. Sing with a mariachis, drink coffee, and scratch. Yes, scratch and scratch. Can't stop scratching. Clean your house after 3 days. You say, "For God's sakes, I'm tired of having fun. I just want to lay down." Your brain says, "Get up and let's have more fun." I don't know how you are, but I was busy. I was busy. Once I started taking uppers, I had to take downers, and I found the cure for blackouts. Man, there was nothing like taking Benzedrine and downers and drinking with whatever would get me right there. Because I couldn't stand the madness inside of me, where there wasn't anything. Because Because you see, whenever there was anything that seemed like I was going to have anything inside of me, there was a rage, there was a fear, there was a terror that would come upon me. So by the time I had my baby, I knew this man didn't want to be married to me because nobody liked to be around me. There was an ugliness about me, and I knew an evilness about me, and I knew this. Never did it occur to me that I was an alcoholic. By the time that I had the baby in my arms, and they put that baby in my arms, I felt like finally, somebody belongs to me. That baby inspired feelings within me that nobody ever had before. Because you see, she was my baby. Nobody could ever take her away from me. She was mine. But you know, I am an alcoholic, and I am a woman alcoholic. And when I drink, I have absolutely no choices and no rights. When I drink, I'm going to do what's in front of me to do, because it's there to do. I never think about tomorrow, and I never think about prices. I just know that I got to get away from the now. And I took that baby and her sister to places that children should not be taken, because the ugliness in me became more than me. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. After the second one was born, sitting here tonight, I left their daddy because I knew that he would never change. I would look in the mirror, and I was a 22-year-old woman, and I felt older and more used up at 22 than I do today at 65, you see. I would look in the mirror, and I said, I better go out, find me somebody else. So I left their daddy and went out, and I've spent 5 years as an unprotected bar-drinking woman. I know the feeling of degradation and self-loathing that a woman alcoholic goes through when she's unprotected and she drinks in bars. The feeling of being dirty, of not being wanted, of being treated so bad by the men. And all I ever wanted was somebody to cherish me and love me. I used to look at them clean women with them clean houses, and it was like looking at somebody from a different world. And many times in those 5 years, I would come to in strange places with strange people, never knowing when I was on my way someplace or I was on my way back from someplace. I would come into that cold water shack when I would turn the lights on, the sink would be black with cockroaches, and there was mice in them filthy floor. And then shack lived those two little girls that the romance of being a mother had long since died, and the responsibility for them choked me. And they would fight and quarrel in whispers because they were terrified. Sometimes I would come to before I was ready, and I would start shrieking and screaming at two little girls. I didn't come here alone. I came here with two little girls that got to have the brunt of my disease. You and I have got to have an ugly side of our disease. And I will never forget the pictures of this girl that's sitting here today, kneeling in front of me saying, Mommy, Mommy, please don't hit me anymore. Please don't hit me. But it was like I was somebody else. And I would hit and I would hit and I would hit until there was no more strength in me. All that rage and terror inside of me would be taken out at them. And when a semblance of sanity would return, I would say, for God's sakes, won't somebody please take these little girls and give them a normal life? Because I knew I couldn't. I never thought I was an alcoholic. I just thought there was a monster that lived within me. See, those things, those are the pictures that make me grateful today with what God has done with the trash that I brought here. After 5 years of this, I started getting letters from her dad that was someplace in Texas getting the cure. And he says, babe, this time it's going to be different. And so he comes home and he doesn't want me to drink. You got to be kidding by this time. So he knifes me and I carry a gun. And 4 days later, he calls and apologizes to me. So we ran off to Las Vegas to get married. I mean, he wouldn't knife me if he didn't love me. Besides, he was the only man that ever wanted me. Really? That I thought wanted me. And we made the Mexican Geographic. We moved about 20 miles from Mama. Hated Mama, never could stand Mama, but never could go too far. I was always afraid I'd come back, they wouldn't know who I was. We bought a little ranch with the turkeys and the horses, and we were going to be farmers as Dauphine and I. I even married him in the Catholic Church. That's going to any length for a Catholic, especially since he was a Methodist. And we joined the PTA, and we were going to be just like all the other clean people are. But I'm a firm believer you can place me in the best of circumstances. And sooner or later, I have to create what is inside of me, because it's inside of me the madness lives. And when he starts making the run to his connection in Orange County, I start making the runs to the wineries. The best thing I can say about a little place called Mira Loma, it's in the middle of four wineries. Blythe has been called the armpit of California, but my experience with Mira Loma is another part of the anatomy not worth mentioning. At least that was my experience there. You see, every hope and every dream went out of my life in those years. I lived in a fog. I remember Norma told me one time they went to Catholic school, and I said, when did you go to Catholic school? And I said, who drove you? She said, you did. I said, whoa, I don't even remember them going, much less driving. But this is a time when every hope and every dream went out of my life. I had married him in the Catholic Church. We joined the PTA and we would go be like everybody else, and it went through my fingers. Every hope and dream went through my fingers at that time. This is the time when I know what the words despair, loneliness, agony. I know those words. I learned them in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I experienced them in a dirty bedroom in Mira Loma. Then where I got to the place where I drank and I drank and I drank, and no matter how much I drank, I couldn't kill the madness inside of me. There was a madness inside of me that wouldn't let me go. And I started looking for answers. I started going to churches because that's what I always heard were answers. And I've been sprinkled, dunked, blessed, prayed over, everything you can think of. And little by little, every hope and dream went. And all I wanted to do was to die. And so I had a bright idea to die. And I saved all my sleeping pills so I could die. I waited until this man was home because I couldn't stand the guilt of having those little girls find me dead. So I waited until he was home, and he and them, were watching television while the monster was in her room. And I came out and I said, told him I was going to kill myself. And he said, okay. So they went back to why. We had a slight communication problem. So I went and took a bath. Do you know what I mean when I said I went and took a bath? Got all the dirty clothes and threw them in the trash just to clean my house because I was going to die. And I felt relieved that I was going to die. I didn't feel anything but relief. And I took enough pills, I guess, to kill a horse, but you know I had had a tolerance. I slept for 2 days and two nights. And when I came to and realized that I was alive, I was not glad to be alive. I was enraged to be alive because I couldn't drink and I couldn't be sober and I couldn't live and I couldn't even die. This man had been in bed with me both nights. And when I came to and realized that he too wanted me dead, I felt like a piece of used meat that nobody wanted. And I come to in what has got to be the loneliest day of my life, with no place to turn. And when I was able to look upon that day without some semblance of objectivity, I realize that my higher power has always had his hand upon my life. Even upon that day, there was a knock on the door, is a lady from the PTA. If there's somebody I didn't want to see, is a lady from the PTA. And there stood Mrs. Clean. She said, hi. I must have been downwind from her because she said, what is wrong? You know, I must have smelled ripe because I'd slept in the same clothes and I never went to the bathroom except on what I had on. So, you know, I wasn't looking very good. And she said, "What is wrong?" And you know, I just started about this SOB and how he done me wrong. I never knew about telling anybody anything about me. It was them. If them were okay, if them had treated me right, I'd have been better. But it was them. So she stayed with me. I don't know how you are, but I always talk a lot. And usually when I talk, people get a glazed look little after a while. That's okay. I'm used to that. But when they have a glazed look and all of a sudden they come to attention, I know I talk too long. Because they come to attention and I went, uh-oh. Because I didn't know what I said. And what she said was, had I ever heard of Al-Anon? And I'd never heard of Al-Anon. But she wanted me to go there and said that if I went there, he would be straightened up. And I would do anything for him to straighten up so I could be okay, so he could take care of me. So she got me cleaned up and took me to Al-Anon. And I felt a little bit like a whore would in a nunnery. There was absolutely no identification between me and them square broads. But you know, they hugged me. They didn't have no class. They hugged me. Them nice, clean, white ladies hugged me. I smiled at them. I gave him one of those. I had heard someplace along the line that I had a beautiful smile. Probably somebody that wanted more of my smile. So I gave him one of those, the lights are on but there's nobody home smile. I thought I fooled him. I found out years later they were laughing at me. I thought I fooled him. I didn't hear anything. Obviously, I didn't hear anything. And then she took me home, and every so often, she'd come pick me up. And one day, I heard release, so I went home and told him I was going to release him. So he used to sleep with his clothes on and a knife under the pillow, and I'd sit in the corner with a big black coat on and watch him. When he'd be a-dozing off, I'd go take a little peek at him, and he'd go, "Ooh, God, that felt so good, it was almost sexual." You know, he was so bad, made me look good. One day I came home and he was gone. He took everything with him. He wasn't planning on coming back. And because bad luck comes in bunches, they kicked me out of Al-Anon at that time. They found out there was a fraud among them and they kicked me over to their husbands who they didn't like either. And they designated that poor soul that had inflicted me upon them to take me over there to their husbands. So she come and picked me up and took me to Pomona. Took me to an old, dilapidated old house and brought me around through the back because I'm a Mexican. That's why she's bringing me around the back. And took me through the kitchen where all the Al-Anons are standing around doing whatever Al-Anons are doing. And I'm not looking in their eyes because I know they kicked me out. I just look at my feet and I walk through them because I don't want them to have that triumph of having me see the disgust that I knew there was in their face, because people always had a look of disgust for me in their face. But I walked through them, and I walked through them and listened to the sounds of Alcoholics Anonymous. I walked into a room where I heard people laughing. They were laughing. They were laughing. Do you know what it feels like the last time I had laughed? I could not tell you. They were laughing and talking and carrying on and loving each other. The music of Alcoholics Anonymous was what attracted me to you and brought me here and kept me here because I wanted what you had. And I looked around and I wanted so desperately to have what you had. I just thought, it's too bad I'm not an alcoholic. If there's another name for the disease that you and I have, it's called I Ain't Got It. Now I know I'm strange and I know I'm different and three steps ahead of the man with a butterfly net. But I'm not an alcoholic. I used to be an alcoholic. When I was a kid, I was an alcoholic. But I cured it with Benzedrine. And I just hadn't found the right combination again that would work. But I loved how I felt when I was with you. And you know what? You put your arm around me and you said, keep coming back. The most important words that you and I have to say to one another. Keep coming back. What a disappointment it was to me when I found out you were telling that to everybody. I looked around at all them sober, single, good-looking young guys, and I said, I'm going to get me one of those. And it was the sickest one there. It had to be. I got radar. But it takes what it takes, and that's what it took for me. For 10 months, I came around Alcoholics Anonymous as a visitor. I'm not telling them I'm an Al-Anon. They kicked me out of Al-Anon. And I'm not an alcoholic. I might be a little bit something like potential. I used to be. But now I just have not found the right combination. So you let me be a visitor for 10 months. I start feeling uncomfortable, so I've stopped drinking and doubled up on the Miltowns and Benzedrine and got weirder. Everybody gets weirder, don't they, without a little alcohol to keep them sane. And this guy wants to get rid of me because I'm trying to kill him. I always try to kill him because they don't behave. That's why I want to kill him. And I wanted to kill him, and they don't like for you to want to kill him when they're sober. So he tried to get rid of me. I'm not easy to get rid of because I don't have a backup. So I moved to Pomona to be closer to the action. And I walked into a room one day, and there's this little guy sitting there. He's really cute, got big blue eyes and blonde hair, and just got out of the reformatory. And he says he don't have a girlfriend, he don't have a surfboard, he don't have a car. And I was thinking to myself, come here, little boy. I'll take care of you. I don't know. Maybe they saw the insanity in me, but I didn't have any trouble drawing him in. It's keeping him in that I had a little trouble doing. Well, and this guy didn't know what hit him. He thought a Mack truck hit him. But after their relationship was over, he decided to become a minister. And I'd like to think that somehow in my small way, I helped push him over to God. I don't like women, and I don't trust men, and that don't leave you much. And I never heard about withdrawals. All I heard about keep coming back and live happily ever after. And so I just kept coming back. I got weird. I mean, I got strangely weird where I got blackouts sober. I used to work for Fender's guitar, making the bridges for the guitars. And they bring me boxes and boxes of guitar bridges that I made all wrong. And I was sober. I had blackout sober. And he was the first man that had ever been kind to me. He was the first man that had ever been gentle with me. Everywhere that he went, he wanted to take me with him. And he was always so proud to be seeing me with me. Me that had always been abused and misused by every man I'd ever had. And I'd have stayed there forever if I could have with him. I always had a feeling in the very core of me. Not only did I want to be loved, but I would say, do anything you want to me, just don't leave me. The fear of abandonment, the loneliness of the abandonment that I couldn't stand. I know today that you and I do not come together by accident. I truly believe that we come together by divine appointment. And yet every relationship has its beginning and its parting. The only relationship that keeps on growing is a relationship that I found with my higher power. But it took so long. I am grateful today that it took what it took, you see, because I am one that is so arrogant that if it comes easy, I'll not value it. I had another drunk in me, because when he drank, so did I. It was not my worst drunk, but it seemed to be my most hopeless one, because I had tried Alcoholics Anonymous and I knew it worked for you. But nothing ever worked for me. And I came back to you because a man named Carson went and brought me back on a rainy Wednesday night in December in 1965. In December the 22nd of 1965, I celebrated my 30th birthday. And the victory is not mine. How could it be mine? I am not a miracle. The miracle is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you don't have to be desperate to come to Alcoholics Anonymous and be teachable. It just helps. It just helps to have no place else to go, nobody to turn to. My family had long since quit talking to me. I had nobody but you. So it helps to come here with no place else to go. As long as I fulfill the conditions that are laid down in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't believe in prayer and medication. As Johnny Harris told me, he says, do these steps according to the book, and the great events will come to pass for you and countless others, as it says in the book. And I didn't have any other choice except to do it according to the book. I'm glad that they didn't have some of the blockers that they have today to keep me from feeling my feelings. Because I got to feel my feelings in order to take them steps to the way they were laid down for me. I don't want to miss anything here. I didn't miss anything out there, and I don't want to miss anything here. When I first came, they were all my heroes. Aren't they all just... Oh, so wonderful. So I liked them guys. I didn't like them women just because I was sober. Guys were always friendlier. It helps to be 32 and cutesy cute. At least I thought I was cutesy cute. I remember one time I walked into a market to buy cigarettes because I was afraid to walk into liquor stores. And I had my hair dyed red, kind of a little bit redder than what I have it now. I had a royal blue dress, skin tight, with black stockings and candy apple red shoes, and makeup about an inch thick. And the people were staring at me, and I'm thinking, I'm looking good. So I'm strutting. They must have thought I walked out of a cat house, but our disease is of perception. And I loved how I felt when I was with you, and I went to a meeting every night. You told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and then to take the cotton out of my ears and put it in my mouth. It was not difficult for me to not say anything. I was always afraid to open my mouth, and you kicked me out of here. I didn't know you couldn't kick people out of AA. I just went and smiled. Well, I'm cruising the guys, right? So in the beginning, they know more than me. Then I know more than some of them. Then I want to talk and tell you how wonderful it is. But I hated a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't resent anybody. I didn't have any resentments when I came here. I had two emotions. I either loved you or I hated you. I had nothing in between. I didn't have any character defects. They all did it to me. So I had a wonderful attitude. I hated this guy. I hated the way he walked, the way he talked, the way he looked. Everything about him was just obnoxious to me. And when he would talk, I would just... And I would go to some of them guys that look like they know what they're talking about. And I ask him, how do you get over resentment with my smile? And they say, turn it over easy, does it this too? Shall pass one day at a time. Go home, read the book, keep coming back, and don't drink. All right? So I'd go home and do it, and then I came the next night, and I'd look. I was never happy till I saw him. Oh, I just love seeing him. You know, there's a phase in resentment that you just love. Too bad it turns on you, and you just... I didn't go back to you, so I'd go to somebody else. Now, I told you I didn't like women just because I was sober. Them older ones, they had a lot of time. They look at me. I don't know what they're seeing, but whatever they're seeing, I don't want them to see them. And I don't like them younger girls. Thank God there wasn't very many young girls at that time, because I'm with this young guy, and I'm like a monkey with its monklet. I paid my price for this chair, didn't I? So one day this guy's talking and he's crying. I said, Jesus Christ, how embarrassing, he's crying. Hasn't he ever heard of John Wayne, Iwo Jima, Pancho Villa, Emiliano Zapata? Somebody, for God's sake, he's crying. After the meeting, they all went and put their arms around me. I said, oh, shit. So I went and gave him one of those stiff arm hugs. You know those stiff arm hugs? You reserve for people that may have something contagious. What I had was bad enough without what he, getting what he had. He didn't have no class. He just came right in and put his head on my shoulder and started to cry. And that startled me. It startled me because the pain in him reached out and touched the pain in me. I don't know, but you and I know what pain is. I don't know about loving and caring for anybody else. I'm just so busy hugging my pain to me that I don't know how to care for anybody else. But he blindsided me. And I truly believe that it was from that day to this that I belonged in Alcoholics Anonymous. And somebody asked me one time, how does it feel to be sober 30 years? I said, exactly the same way it did when I was sober 9 months and that man intruded into my self-centeredness. That's how it feels like today. Because you see, it is true that I am my own worst enemies like me. I don't need enemies. That's a job I like for myself. And I believe that my journey began then. I had a lady volunteer to be my sponsor. And she told me I'd stay home and learn to be a mother. My kids became teenagers, and they became everything that I was afraid they would become because I turned them that way. How did I know that all teenagers have alien takeover at 12? I thought it was just mine because I was a monster I had been. And she said, you got to give up that young man or one day he will give you up. Now, I had never lived without a man, and I'm not talking about sex. It's somebody that get away, that horrible, lonely something, that somebody that would just cherish me, at least for the little while. So I did the most reasonable thing for me, is I gave up the sponsor. She made me feel guilty. If you're from a small group like I was, getting rid of sponsors is like getting rid of empties. It's very difficult. It's easy to get and hard to get rid of. So be careful who you get as your sponsor. Because I'm a moral coward. I will not tell anybody the truth if it comes and hits me in the face. Because I'm too busy being a people pleaser. I want them to like me. I'll tell them whatever they want me to tell them so they can like me. I never knew anything about the truth. I took in I took the steps really fast because they're easy to take if you read them and just say, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that. Took my first inventory, wrote the greatest story ever told, and took it to a lady minister because I ain't telling them and them women in Alcoholics Anonymous anything about me because I didn't want them to look at me the way my mother and her friends and my relatives and the Al-Anons, my perception. I know today the Al-Anons could see right through that, you see, but I thought that I was fooling everybody. So I went to a lady minister and kept on my merry way, doing it my way. I said, yeah, well, God, you know how it's wonderful and easy to talk about gratitude. It's easy to talk about it. I'm so grateful that God, like Santa Claus, said, give me, thank you, give me, thank you. Never do I ever think about that gratitude is an action word. If I'm grateful, then I'm going to stand up for what I'm grateful for. And I believe today that if I say I'm grateful, by golly, I better be ready to stand up and be counted. I better be ready to stand up and make sure that this program is passed on for the new ones, the way it was passed on to me from them old timers. I always respect them old timers that kept the doors open till I got here. I don't want the doors to close from the way Alcoholics Anonymous was brought to me because I walked through it. Now, you know, I married that young man, always afraid he'd leave me. And because I lived in terror, the day came when my higher power said it's time. I was sober 5 years. My children started drinking and taking drugs. And I said, God, spare my babies. But he didn't spare my babies. I had two daughters. One ran off to Ohio, this one here. I hated my mother. Only went 20 minutes from her. The other one went to live in a commune, came home with a burn the size of a silver dollar on her chest. And And I died inside. I had a nervous breakdown, and again, I contemplated an attempted suicide. That young man went and took me to the psycho ward, went home, packed his clothes, and left me. And everything that I ever feared came about me. And the only reason that I stand before you tonight is because my higher power has had other plans for me. It was at that time that I made my complete surrender that I believe today. It couldn't have happened any other way for me because I was not in touch with reality. I thought I had taken those steps. I know today that I was just gathering information. The first few years, I was just gathering information. It was like having an hourglass. All the sand is on top, but it only goes down one sand at a time. If I have something happen that is a so-called tragedy, maybe two sands will come down. But most of the time, it's one sand at a time. He went and took me to the psycho ward, went home, packed his clothes, and left me. And the women of Alcoholics Anonymous came around me and held me up. I got sober in toast burner country. And those toast burner ladies that had never drank out of their kitchen came around me and held me. And I was finally able to share the secrets of my heart with them, and I realized that we were not so different. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we get to be each other's mamas, you see. In alcohol, I never had a mama, not really. But here I have been mothered by the women of Alcoholics Anonymous that listened to my pain, that hugged me and identified with my pain. And it is from the men in Alcoholics Anonymous that have treated me like a lady that I learned to be a lady. But because I was left with absolutely no more props, that I threw myself completely and absolutely into this program without any reservation and made peace with my higher power. I said, okay, God, I'm never going to be happy again. All you ever want me to do is work with the sick women, drunks, and let him puke on me. All right. So I threw myself completely into this program, and that is the reason that I walked tall with dignity, self-respect, integrity that you have taught me in this program. I moved to Orange County and I got a sponsor. My sponsor learned to be a sponsor from Hitler. And when I grow up, I want to be like my sponsor. She talked to me in ways that if I talked that way to the women I sponsored, they never talked to me again. And me, I just wanted to be like my sponsor. My sponsor's name was Mary Reagan. And my sponsor spoon-fed me Alcoholics Anonymous, just like you spoon-fed her. She taught me how to get this program out of this book and apply him in my own life. I was having a little bit of trouble in my life when I came to her. I was involved with a man that just happened to have a wife. And I came to her with this shame. I said, look at what I've gotten myself into. And she said, well, Angie, some of us just got to eat shit with a rusty spoon till we can't stand it anymore. Ooh, ooh. I could feel the bayonet coming out the end through the back of me. I remember one time we went on a cruise, first sober sailor cruise, and Duffy, you know Duffy, and we were all sitting around, and I wanted to take a napkin because as a souvenir, and I used to take ashtrays as souvenirs when I go speaking. She said, you know, that's stealing. I said, it's not stealing, it's souvenirs. And Duffy said, yeah, that's why they put their name on it, Mary. And she said, you shut up. And he did, too. She said to me, she said, with disgust, because she couldn't convince me, and she said, Angie, I don't know about you, but my integrity is worth more than an ashtray. That's how she did. She bayoneted the truth into me. I threw myself completely and absolutely into this program, and I found out the secret. The secret was that after all that's said and done, there's only you and me, God, anyway. That which I demanded from these people, they never had it to give. I started working with the women from 12-step houses. I used to take them to meetings and give them money and bring them into my home. They thought I cared. I didn't care. I got problems, but I just did it because I'm supposed to do it. But she, God throws in the joker. When I act as if I care, one day the day comes when I care what happens to you. And that's what made me feel like I thought you loving me would feel when I started really caring about you. And that was a gift. If God removes any character defects from me, it'd been by accident, because Mary always told me, if God removes all my character defects, I'll disappear. So he's got to take him cafeteria style. My job is to do those steps to the best of my ability and to tell the truth. Whenever I used to come to her with elaborate schemes, she'd say, for God's sakes, what's wrong with the truth? Oh, never occurred to me to tell the truth. My kids came back. I don't even care if they come back or not. They came back, went to work. I went to school, became self-supporting through my own contributions. And Norma lived with me, and this was a time where we lived in the corner, and her window had a big a shelf by the window, and she used to have all these big bottles of booze there. I never thought she was an alcoholic, and it never occurred to me that any of the people who had come to pick me up thought they were my bottles. They'd look at them and say, oh, yeah, they're Norma's. Never dawned on me, duh. I used to think I was really brilliant. And I'm one of those ladies that had to learn to live alone to find out the difference between being alone and being lonely. I worked this program, and I did a lot of institutional work, 12-step work, and I was just feeling great living by myself. I said, man, what was this all about? And the day came when I found out what I had, when my sister, who had always been held up as an example, chose to take her life, and it was my destiny to be the one to find her. And I could not believe what was before my eyes. And I truly believe that I have been spared, that her life was none of my business, just like my life is none of my business. I truly believe that I have been spared because I am God's melody alive, and He sings His song through me. I told you my children went on their way, doing their thing. And Mary taught me that you can have happiness and joy in your life with a thorn in your heart. Norma taught me that her life was none of my business too. So I tried to help her, and if I love you, get away from me, because I'll kill you. She came over to my house one day, weighed 75 pounds. She said 76. I said 75. What does she know? She was loaded. I was sober. I thought she had AIDS. She looked like a shriveled up little old lady with gray hair. And gray looked like Dracula's wife or something. I thought I'd never see her alive again. My other daughter, 2 weeks after my sister killed herself, 2 weeks after that, I became a grandma. I don't know about you guys. I never knew how to be a mother. Didn't even know, have a clue on. But I'm good as a grandma. Man, I'd call myself up to any grandma. Huh? They thought grandma and Santa Claus meant the same thing. I finally found out how to get along with kids. Just give them everything they want. One time I took my oldest granddaughter to a conference, and I had a big white blouse that covers a multitude of tortillas and beans. She says, Grandma, you look just like the white angel. It was also at that time that I fell in love. I fell in love with a newcomer. If it offends spiritual giants, I want you to know that it offended me. I went to a conference once, and he went with me in a place where I didn't think anybody I knew would be. And here comes my friend, Frank Sloan, coming in. And you know it's going to come. He says, well, is he with you? I'm trying to hide him over here. I said, yeah. Is he one of us? Well, he sees his nose is still red. How long she been sober? Well, his head used to go like them little dogs in the Mexican cars. says, how long did guy been sober? I said, five minutes. She says, for God's sakes, Angie, give that poor guy a break. Let him get sober first. So I went to Mary. I said, Mary, because I'm also like to whine. And she said, Angie, he's a nice guy. If you don't want him, I'll take him. She said, if you're afraid somebody's going to find out something about you, just tell them. And then you won't be afraid. Because it's the fear that makes the walls between you and me. And I don't want to do that anymore. You see, today I know that I'm a stand-up person for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That man and I have been married now 18 and a half years. I believe it's going to work. We both know that I am not the message, I am the messenger. I bring to you the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to tell you that there is joy and happiness in our home, that I have two daughters, members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that we are friends, that all the pain is gone, and now the only thing there is love. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't tell my loved ones how special and how much they are loved. That I allowed my daughters to share their poison with me. I let it be, I was a safe place for them to dump their poison. That, yes, I did it to them, whether it was by genes or by environment. And I had to come to the place where I had to say, I can no longer pay for my past. You got to forgive me for your own sake. I can give you the disease, but the recovery is yours, you see. I am now a great grandmother. I think it's absolutely insane to try to raise little kids when you're 65. But you see, my granddaughter is one of us. How do I know? She feels guilty just breathing. Oh, yes, yes, yes. She goes out looking like a doll and comes back looking like she's been dragged around the block. I just love watching her. And the little guy stays with me, and he calls me Granny, and everything that he wants, I give him. I don't care when he's 16. He's going to say to me, come and hit me and say, give me the money for the drugs, Granny. And I'm going to say, isn't he wonderful? I walk in the sunlight of the Spirit. I work them steps. There are five things that I do today and have done for a long time. I go to meetings. I read that book. I take those steps. I continue to take those steps because I'm unfinished business. I have a sponsor, and I am sponsored. I was a stand-up person for my sponsor. I went to the last mile with my sponsor. I have another sponsor today because I believe that me and my, if I don't have a sponsor, there's a reality check, two reality checks, meetings and sponsorship. If one of them is missing, guess who's the reality check? I ain't taking no chances today. I am so grateful that I have been touched by my higher power and yours. Thank you.